So it's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Avner for part two of our series on re-experiences, the Rav's Rosh Hashanah. We've done the Rav's like Pesach, Yom Kippur. Soon we'll run out of holidays, but we'll have other things to do. And a pleasure to welcome everybody. I want to thank again Carl and Joel Cohen, who are sponsoring this series in memory of their father and grandfather, Dr. Arthur Cohen, who is very close to the Rav in Boston. The Rav was Mitzvah Kiddushin at their wedding, and a longtime family connection, Avram Yitzchak Ben Kalman Mordechai HaKohen. We should come together for happy occasions. Rabbi Adler, it's all yours. And I'm going to turn off my video so you don't have to look
at
me.
Thank you very much. The conversation you were just having with Ruth, she's a member of our shul in Katamon in Yerushalayim. So we'll put all her Switzerland background behind us. She's a Yerushalmit in every sense of the word.
Yes, I meant in originally, where did she make Aliyah from? You know, they made Aliyah from Switzerland. Okay. Unfortunately, I'm still in Toronto, so it's hard for me, you know, like.
I want to mention something. There's a museum in Beit Shemesh. It's called the Museum Hatnachim, and they have a big collection of shofarim there.
Right. So this is Rabbi Slifko's museum, and I saw it with my kids, and it's certainly something worthwhile when you come to Israel, and those who are here, to spend a few hours at that museum in Beit Shemesh. Tzaraim tovim, and good early afternoon or late morning or evening here in Yerushalayim between Mincha and Ma'ariv. This second part we will deal with Malchiyot, Zichronot, Shofarot, the three important ingredients of the Tfilat Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, and see what our great Rebbe, the Rav Zichrono Lebracha, had to add and contribute to our understanding of these brachot. Malchiyot being the section of citations, specifically 10 citations from Tanakh about Malchiyot, monarchy, God's reign over the world. The three verses from the Torah, three from Tehillim, three from the prophets, the Nevi'im, and then wrapping it up with one more pasuk from the Torah, it adds up to 10 pasukim. Now, some of you are going to catch me right away and say, well, the last time I counted in the Machzor, there were more than 10. That's an independent issue, why some additional pasukim were grafted upon the Malchiyot. But the basic structure of all three of the special brachot are 10 pasukim. 10 verses, of which 3 from the Torah, 3 from the Ketuvim, but the citations are all from Tehillim, 3 from the Nevi'im, from the prophets, and then the wrap-up, the 10th, was from the Torah itself. This gives us somewhat of an inflated Shmon Esrei for Musaf on Rosh Hashanah. So how many brachot do we have on Musaf of Rosh Hashanah? The answer is we have 9 brachot. There's only one problem to this. We happen to have 10 items on the agenda to integrate into the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. And before I go further, there is a dispute. Do we incorporate the Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot only in Musaf as we do? That's the way the custom is throughout the Jewish nation for the last few hundred years, for sure. Or is it supposed to be said in every single Shmon Esrei of Rosh Hashanah, which means even in Aravit, in Shacharit, in Musaf, and Mincha, there would be the integration of Amalchiyot, Zichronot, Shofarot. The one who really adheres to that opinion is Rabbi Zrachya Halevi, 12th century Provence, southern France, known as the Baal HaMa'or, and he had this opinion. The Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, stood against the author of the Ma'or, the Baal HaMa'or, and said, no, it's only in the Tfilah that we blow the shofar. And we'll see that indeed that we know we blow the shofar only in Musaf, and there is an integral connection between the Tfilat, the Tkiat Shofar of Musaf with these three special brachot. But to get back to the math, there happen to be 10 items on the agenda. We have the first three brachot, which are pretty standard for the entire year. Magen Abraham is the first. Mechaye Meitim is the second. The third in the Aseret Meitshuvah, and starting with Rosh Hashanah, it carries with it Amelech HaKadosh instead of Hakel HaKadosh. That we all know. But on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the bracha v'ata kadosh shemcha kadosh is tremendously expanded with the uvetein pein tein pachdecha Hashem Elokeinu kol maasecha uvechein tein kavod uvechein tzadikim v'timloch kadosh ata v'nor Hashemecha. The Rambam even tells us that there were those communities who incorporated this inflated bracha of Hamelech HaKadosh, not only on the 2 days Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but every single davening, every tefillah of the Aseret Yimei Tshuva. That's not our custom. Our custom is only to inflate the bracha Ata Kadosh for the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and the 1 day of Yom Kippur, but we end with Hamelech HaKadosh throughout for the duration of the Aseret Yimei Tshuva, as you know. So that's the third bracha, but the bracha of Ata Kadosh, without the inflation part, is clearly standard. Then I jump to the end of Shmoneh Esrei, and you also have three standard brachot. The bracha of Ritzei, the bracha of Modim, and the bracha of Sim Shalom. That's very, very standard. So this adds up now to six. Now, in a normal Musaf situation, be it Rosh Chodesh, be it Shabbat, be it Yom Tov, there's one more bracha, the centerpiece, and that's the bracha of the sanctity of the day, Kedushat Hayom, where in the Korban Mus, in the Tfilat Musaf, we make mention of the Musaf sacrifice at Beit HaMikdash, whatever it may be, according to the schedule of Parshat Pinchas. The Ashkenazim actually read the psukim, the Sfaradim just make a mentioning of it without reading the psukim, but that's really the core of every Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, of Shabbat, of Yom Tov, and it ends with Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbat, Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh Yisrael V'Rashei Chodeshim, Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh Yisrael V'Azmanim, and so on. That's what a Musaf looks like. But on Rosh Hashanah, we have to add to the formal standard structure of Musaf of seven brachot, and add three additional brachot, Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. So Malchiot is the psukim that deal with the gods reigning over the world, past, present, and future. Zichronot also has to do with memories, but we'll see in a moment it has to do with memories not only of the past, but to God the future is also a memory. And Shofarot has to do with certain scenes, past, present, and future, where the shofar plays a role. That's three extra brachot. If I remember correctly from first grade, 7 plus 3 is 10. I think I got that one right. Yet, we have 10 items on the agenda. The first three brachot, the last three brachot, the centerpiece of Kedushat Hayom and the Musaf of the Korban, that's 7, very standard. And now we're going to add 3 more, Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. And I'm telling you that there are only 9 brachot. So how does that work out? Only 9 brachot. Why don't we have 10 brachot? We have 10 items on our Musaf agenda. So we should have 10 brachot. The Anshe Knesset HaGdola, taking us back about 2,500 years to the beginning of the Second Temple era, ordained that this davening will only have 9 brachot. Why? We'll see in a moment what the Rav had to say about this. But it's 9 brachot. And in order to get 10 items on the agenda into a schedule of 9 brachot, we're going to have to force 2 of the brachot to merge. And the question is going to be, which 2 will merge in order to create a scenario of 9 brachot? So I'm going to see if I can do this, post the page. I hope everybody can see this page on the screen. And there's a first Mishnah.
We can see it. Rabbi, I don't know if you can enlarge it a little bit. You've got it over on one side of the screen. If not, it's, I can see it.
Okay. I'm not great at the technology here.
Yes. You were born even before me. So then,
when I have questions about the computer, thank God I have grandchildren to help me out here. They're right there, but I don't have grandchildren home right now. So I think we're going to have to just work with this text. And the Mishnah tells us in source number 1 from Masechet Rosh Hashanah, say the brachot. Here is the order of the brachot of Shmoneh Esrei, which I'll just say parenthetically, that the Rav said that there are 3 ideas in halakha where the word seder is absolutely critical. One is the avodah, the service of the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur. He must necessarily do it in order. The other is Leil HaSeder, what we call Seder night. It's not our great-grandmother who called it a Seder, but the Halakha calls it a Seder. It must be in order, and that's why poems were authored and drilled into children's heads, like Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, so we can sing the Seder and do it right. If you look at the Haggadah Shleima of Rav Menachem Kasher, there are 14 different variations of poems for the Seder of Seder night. But it has to be done according to the Seder. And the last one is Tfilat Amidah Shmoneh Esrei. It has to be done according to the Seder. There's a Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin. It says that the Anshei Knesset Gdolah, 120 Zkenim, Tiknu Shmoneh Esrei Brachot Al HaSeder, according to the order. And that's why if somebody makes a mistake somewhere in Shmoneh Esrei and catches himself or herself, you have to go back sometimes to the beginning, because the davening has to be in order. You can't just take bracha 13 and repeat it after bracha 16. That's not going to work. So here it says, say the brachot. Omer, we say, avot, that's the first bracha, Magen Avraham. Gvurot is the second bracha, ata gibor, mechayei metim. And then this kedushat Hashem, ata kadosh, which we end with hamelech hakadosh. And here, strangely enough, the Mishnah says, kolel malchiyot imahen. We graft upon this third bracha all the psukim of Malchiyot. And if this sounds strange to you, it should, because this is not what we do. And the Mishnah says, and after HaMelech HaKadosh, there is no shofar blowing, eino tokea. But then we continue with Kedushat HaYom, the sanctity of the day, as if it's a regular musaf like Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, and other Yom Tov. And after that bracha of the Korban Musaf of the day, tokea, this blowing of shofar. And then there's the Zichronot Brachot, Psukim, and then we blow again, tokea. And then there's the shofarot, tfilah, and then again, tokea, we blow. And afterwards, avodah, that's ritzei, v'shevet avodah libi beitecha. And then there's hodaya, that's thanksgiving, that's modim anachnu lach. And then there's birkat kohanim. And here the Rav spent a few minutes explaining that Chazal didn't call the last bracha sim shalom, but called it birkat kohanim, because in essence, Shmoneh Esrei ends with Modim. Atov Shimcha Ulcha Ne'el Lehodot. Technically, that's the end of Shmoneh Esrei. How do I know? Because we do a symbolic kneeling and bowing before and after the first bracha, which is Magen Avraham, and before and after the last bracha, which is Modim. So what is Sim Shalom? It's actually an add-on as a reaction to Birkat Kohanim. Now, I know that throughout the world, there's only Birkat Kohanim for Musaf on a Yom Tov, but here in Eretz Israel, we have Birkat Kohanim every morning, and on Shabbat and Yom Tov twice, and then Yom Kippur even three times for Nila. So we have a lot of experience with Birkat Kohanim, and Birkat Sim Shalom is nothing but a reaction to Birkat Kohanim. Sim Shalom Tova Uverecha corresponds to Yivarechecha Hashem. Ki Ba'or Panecha Natata Lanu Hashem Lokenu corresponds to Ya'er Hashem Panav Elecha. And the Tov Beinecha Levarech Et Amcha Yisrael B'cholet V'chol Sha'a B'shlomecha corresponds to V'yasem Lecha Shalom. And therefore, in Nusach Ashkenaz, whenever there's no theoretical Birkat Kohanim, theoretical, like Tfilat Aravit, and basically Mincha too, so instead of Sim Shalom, we have a type of substitute bracha, an abbreviated version, Shalom Rav Ayisrael Amcha Tasim Lo'olam. But if you know that on a public fast day, where in theory there should be Birkat Kohanim by Mincha, so even in Nusach Ashkenaz, we say Sim Shalom by Mincha on a public fast day. So that's I'm just closing the window on the idea of Birkat Kohanim being the last bracha. And then the Mishnah continues, Divrei Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. This is the opinion of one of the early Tanaim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. And I say again, don't get nervous. We don't do that. We don't follow this practice. But Rabbi Akiva says, Amalei Rabbi Akiva, im eino tokea lemalchiyot, if you're not going to blow the shofar for the psukim of Malchiyot, because it's been grafted upon the third bracha of Shmoneh Esrei HaMelech HaKadosh, lama ul maskir, why does he mention it at all? Ela, but, says Rabbi Akiva, the following, and this is going to sound familiar now, Avot, Magen Avraham, Gvurot, Ata Gibor, Kedushat Hashem, the bracha of HaMelech HaKadosh, V'cholel Malchiyot im Kiddushat Hayom. In the fourth bracha, we incorporate the Malchiyot with the Korban Musaf. This is precisely what we do, and we end it with a double ending. Baruch Hashem, Melech HaKol HaAretz Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron. It carries a double ending because the bracha has two component parts, the Korban Musaf part, which is the sanctity of the day, and the Psukim of Malchiyot. And then there's a shofar blowing, V'Tokea, and then the Zuchonot, and you blow, and the Shofarot, Brachot, and you blow, and then you have Ritzei Abuda, Haudaya, and Birkat Kohanim. So you have the Machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, and as the Rambam tells us in source number 2 in his Mishnah commentary, V'Halacha Ke Rabbi Akiva. No surprise here, because there is a principle in Halacha, Halacha Ke Rabbi Akiva Mi Chaviro. If Rabbi Akiva is arguing with one other Tana in the Mishnah, unless otherwise indicated, the halakha follows the ruling of Rabbi Akiva. If one is familiar with the Gemara itself, this, what I read here was the Mishnah, there's actually a third option of how to organize the Shmon Esrei for Musaf, and that is to put the Kiddushat Hayom with Zichronot, with the fifth bracha, that nobody even knows of, unless it's just caught in the middle of the sugya of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. But I believe that even though it's not in accordance with our halakha, there's a great message to be derived from that view that attaches the Zichronot bracha with the Kiddushat Hayom, the sanctity of the day. Because the key idea in Zichronot is the Akedat Yitzchak, requirement, the command of God to Avraham Avinu to offer his son Yitzchak on the altar, on the Mizbeach. And this is a drama that plays itself out throughout the ages. And it's not just a one-shot deal in Jewish history with Avraham Avinu. And I'll get to that shortly in the shiur. But the idea that the Akedah is an integral part of the sanctity of the day led Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, another Tana, to suggest that in order to manufacture a 9 bracha Shmon Esrei with 10 component parts, so let's put the Kiddushat Hayom together with Zichronot. So that we're going to put on the side. What we have in the Mishnah are two views. One is that the Malchiyot is grafted on the third bracha, Kiddushat HaShem, HaMelech HaKadosh. And the second view is Rabbi Akiva, is what we do, the more popular view, that the Malchiyot is with the Kiddushat HaYom, with the Korban Musaf. And here's where the Rav starts talking. And he asks the following question: what was on Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's mind by suggesting that the Malchiyot Psukim should be grafted upon the Bracha of Atakadosh? Well, it seems very logical. Very, very logical. You're already mentioning HaMelech HaKadosh. That very Bracha ends on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur with HaMelech. So if you're already ending the Bracha with HaMelech, why not throw in all the psukim about God as Melech? Makes an awful lot of sense. So why don't we adopt the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? Why does the Halakha move to the view of Rabbi Akiva? Where what we're doing, in a sense, is separating one type of one Bracha of Melech and another Bracha of Melech. One bracha is Baruch Atah Hashem HaMelech HaKadosh, and the other bracha is Melech HaKol HaAretz Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron. So Rav said as follows. In the history of politics and rule, countries can be governed by one of two systems. One is an autocratic government, a monarch that by force rules over the people. In such a situation, the people have very little to say about running a government. It's literally a one-man job on the top of the apex of power, and that person makes all the decisions for everything that's going to happen in that particular country. It's an autocrat. Now, an autocrat can be a dictator, can be a tyrant. He could also be a very benevolent ruler, by the way. The fact that it's autocratic doesn't mean that that people have difficult life. Quite the contrary. There were some countries where this was the preferred option, that there was a benevolent autocratic government in power, and they let it roll, and they thought this was a very, very livable situation. The other a type of government is a democratically elected. So democrat means the rule of the people. So rule of the people means that people go to the ballot once in a while, whatever it may be. In most countries, it's once in 4 years. In Israel, it became once every 3 months. But we go to the polling booth, and we vote in a government. So basically, the government should be responsible to the people. So it's a democratic government. So now if we take these two concepts of rule, and we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Melech Malchei HaMlachim, the king of all kings, whereas we sing on Rosh Hashanah, Melech Elyon, Melech Elyon, Melech Elyon, and that's all in contradistinction to the Melech Evyon, the poor king. And we're not talking economically now. The Melech Elyon is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the great. And they are mortal kings, and they are nothing more than the Melech Evyon. So what type of rule does God expect that we should relate to him? As an autocrat, or is his rule democratically accepted by the people? The Rav said both can work. One is lichatchila. Lichatchila means this is the way God really wants it to be. What does God want it to be? That we should vote for him. We should accept God. When we say that God should reign over the entire world, we're actually saying that we are choosing to have a Kadosh Baruch Hu rule over us. It's our choice. And this is a democratic vote that goes on Rosh Hashanah. We accept the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And, Hasidei Chabad, the Rebbe used to speak about this all the time. The Chabad movement would have a special ceremony on the first night of Rosh Hashanah, which was called Coronation Night, where they would crown God, as if to say, King of the Universe. Koronatzia Nacht, they call it in Yiddish. And this may sound really silly, but giving God a crown. God doesn't need a crown. We need to crown God with a crown. We need to do it. It is important for man to know that he voted and selected HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as opposed to any other deity, as opposed to any other power, as opposed to any other thing of supreme importance. We want HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want God. And that is God being accepted by the people, certainly by the Jewish people, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking forward to the entire unit, the entire globe voting for him. This was the mission of Avraham Avinu when he would set up at the street, at the main intersections. Torah says, Vayiben Sham Mizbeach, he built an altar. But I remember studying Ramban by our great Rebbe Rabbal Lichtenstein, Zechat Tzadik Levracha, in Alon Dishiv and Alon Shvut. He said, Avraham Avinu was like a little bit of a Chabadnik. He was setting up the mitzvah tank at the various intersections and spreading the good word that there is a one God, spreading monotheism, asking people to think about it and to accept God. And that is going on until this very, very day. He called out the name of God. That means he was publicizing that Kadosh Baruch Hu was there waiting to be accepted. However, unfortunately, not always does humanity accept God as the Melech Malchei HaMlachim. First of all, there are competitive religions out there, and some may even deny God, not all, but some even deny HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our idolatrous practices. And there are people who, at least in theory, are committed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, except that in practice, it doesn't always look like that. They're maybe delinquent in a variety of areas of Torah life. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I have another way of bringing you into the fold, and that is uvechein tein pachtecha Hashem Elokeinu al kol ma'asecha ve'ematcha al kol ma shebarata v'yiruacha kol ha'masim v'yishtachavu lefanecha kol ha'bruim. I can scare the daylights out of you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can do things with Mother Nature and cause a tremendous fright in the world. I can cause a scenario of people rethinking their own standing between themselves and God by using a little virus called Corona, a little crown, Corona is a crown, not much of a crown. Do you know that if you take all the coronaviruses of the entire world and you stuff it into a can of Coca-Cola, you would just barely fill up the can. Fill up one can of Coca-Cola with all the viruses in the world today, throughout the world, of coronavirus. That's how small this is. And look what it's done. It has caused people to take a break in life and rethink their steps. And this is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu can do. It can be floods. It can be disease. Shalom Eidah, we shouldn't know from Tzaraot. It could be a terrible earthquake. It could be a tornado. It could be a terrible, horrible war that things go out of sync and people suffer tremendously. People sometimes in the midst of that kind of calamity will turn back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for somewhat soothing feeling and so on. That is God forcing us, literally forcing us to accept his reign on this world. He prefers not to do it this way. He prefers the other way, to be democratically elected. But if it doesn't work, so Kadosh Baruch Hu will bring out the heavy armor. If you take a remember Parshat Bishalach, so Bnei Yisrael are arguing for water. And this is just a few days after the Yam Suf, the Red Sea. And then afterwards they're arguing for bread. And afterwards they're arguing for water again in Rephidim. And then it says, by Rephidim, they were questioning whether God exists. Hayesh Hashem Yikubeinu Imayin. Is God here? Is he around? Is there a God? Asking that question. And the next thing you know is, Vayavo Amalek. Vayilachem Yisrael Berephidim. Amalek shows up. And Chazal say, why does Rephidim caught into this pasuk? Lama Nismecha. What the connection between the episode of the water and Rephidim? It comes to teach us that if, God forbid, Am Yisrael stoops so low and starts asking, Hayesh Hashem Birkubeinu Imayin, is God here or is he not here? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring about a scenario where you're going to make sure that you know that God is there. As they say, there's no atheist in a foxhole. When the bombs are falling, when the artillery is flowing, you know that you have to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's no question about it. That's who v'chein tein pachdecha Hashem Elokeinu. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu prefers that we do it differently, that we do it by democratically elected. Now the question is, where is the transition between the first type of malchuyot, v'chein tein pachdecha, and the second? So you may say, well, the first comes to an end with Baruch Atah Hashem HaMelech HaKadosh. And now we're moving on to the second part of Malchiyot, or second type of Malchiyot. Well, there's a problem. There's a interruption. You have the idea of the Korban. We mentioned the day that it's Yom HaZikaron HaZeh, and we mentioned the Nechata'enu Galinu Me'atzenu, and you mentioned the Beit HaMikdash, and you mentioned the Korban from Parshat Pinchas, and you get through with all that, and the Chazan sometimes in Rosh Hashanah and Musaf gobbles it up very, very quickly, that part of Chazarat HaShatz, and then you get to a point, Aleinu l'shabeach, right? Aleinu l'shabeach, right? We open up the Aron Kodesh, everybody's standing. V'anachnu korim, mishtachavim, umodim, v'noflim al paneihem. Everybody's bowing down, prostrating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is Malchiyot. This is really, really Malchiyot. And then before we begin, Before we continue with Alkein Nikavel Lecha Hashem Elokeinu, which in our everyday tefillah is simply a run-on with Aleinu L'Shabeach, so much so that we use the conjunction Vav and Ve'Alkein Nikavel Lecha, but in the Matzah of Rosh Hashanah it doesn't say Ve'Alkein, it says Alkein Nikavel Lecha. Check it out. And it means it's a new paragraph, and it's not a continuation of Aleinu L'Shabeach, as we generally assume, because we're so used to it three times a day, every time we leave a minyan, and we say Aleinu L'Shabeach. You know, Aleinu L'Shabeach has caught a nickname. It's called Tfilat HaDerech. People have one foot out the shul when they say Aleinu L'Shabeach. So it's Tfilat HaDerech. But very important tefillah. So Alkein Nekabelecha seems to be the continuation. Yet there is something that is in between, and that is Ochila La'el Achalef Anav Eshalami Menu Ma'ane Lashon Asher Bikal Am Ashira Uzo Abia Renanot Be'ad Nifalav Le'adam Ma'arche Lev Me'adunai Ma'ane Lashon Adonai Sfatai Tiftach Ufi Yagit Yilatecha. That pasuk, Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Ufi Yagit Yilatecha, we use every single Shmoneh Esrei before we even get started. We say Hashem Sfatai Tiftach. So you see that the poem, Ochila La'el Achalef Anav, is something of a beginning. It marks a beginning. And indeed, on Yom Kippur, it's said at the very point, right before the Chazan continues with the special service of the Kohen Gadol. Before the Chazan goes into, whether it's the Sfaradi, Atakonanta, or the Ashkenazi, Amitzkoach, there is Ochila La'el Achalef Anav. On Rosh Hashanah, it's before Malchiyot. Before Malchiyot. So if it's before Malchiyot, why isn't it before Aleinu L'Shabeach? If Aleinu L'Shabeach marks the beginning of Malchiyot. So first, I'll just make a parenthetical insert. In the Sfaradi, the Eidot HaMizrach, the North African communities, the Ochila La'el is actually begins the Chazarat HaShatz. It's an elongated Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Ofi Yigal Tilatecha, and it's not said at this point in the Machzor like the Ashkenazim do. Yet, I checked out in the Rambam at the end of Hilchot Tfilah, the Rambam has an abbreviated siddur of every possible davening. And in his abbreviation of the Rosh Hashanah Musaf, he has Ochila La'el exactly the way Ashkenazim have it. Exactly. Before the Musaf, before the Alkein Nekabel Lecha. And the Rav said, this comes to show that Aleinu L'Shabeach is not part of Malchiyot. So if it's not part of Malchiyot, what is it? So he said as follows. We are coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a pledge in Malchiyot that we, not only Am Yisrael, but we believe there's a universal message here. Kakatu b'toratecha Hashem yimloch le'olam va'ed. All over the place. V'ya Hashem le'melech al kol ha'aretz. V'yom ahu yeh Hashem echad ha'shmo echad. This is not a Jewish parochial idea. This is a universal idea of God's dominion and reign over the world. In order for Am Yisrael to accept the mandate to go out to the world and spread the good word of Avraham Avinu, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, we have to take hold of ourselves and investigate in-house, are we all with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You cannot have a mission to go out unless you are firmly committed from within. And hence, the Rav said, Aleinu L'Shabeach is for domestic consumption. That is to say, it's for Am Yisrael. This is where we, Am Yisrael, pledged to Kadosh Baruch Hu that we are with him in anticipation of the bracha of Malchiyot, where when Am Yisrael feels that indeed we are committed to Kadosh Baruch Hu completely, now and only now can we go out to the world and spread the word of Hashem Yimloch L'olam Va'ed and Vaya Hashem L'melech HaKol Ha'aretz and Elokeinu L'Kevoteinu Miloch Al Kol Ha'olam Kulo B'Chvodecha should reign over the entire world. Only an Am Yisrael that's firmly committed, and that takes place in Aleinu L'Shabeach before Ochila La'el. And hence, technically, Malchiyot begins with Alkein Nekaveh Lecha. There you have your 10 psukim, Hashem Yimloch L'olam Va'ed, and then you have V'ne'emar, and V'ne'emar, and then Uvudrei Kodshecha Katuv Le'mor, and the psukim from Tehillim, and again V'ne'emar, and V'ne'emar, another pasuk, until you get to V'toratcha Katuv Le'mor, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, which is the 10th pasuk in the scheme of the Malchiyot. So this is how the Rav understood the two types of Malchiyot. The Malchiyot, the reigning of God by choice, which is the bracha of Malchiyot, and what we say at the beginning of Shmoneh Esrei, the Malchiyot by force, by coercion, through fear and trepidation, and so on. And hence, Rabbi Akiva understood that these two malchiyot should be split and not merged into one bracha, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri had suggested, because it would have lost the impact of the two ideas, two dimensions of the malchiyot. And indeed, they are kept separately. Now we move on to the zichronot. So what exactly are the zichronot? Ata zocher maaseh olam. And in zichronot, we actually take a step back to the days of Adam Rishon and Noach. We spend a few psukim about Noach. But then we work our way up to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Zacharti, remember the covenants with Abraham and Yitzhak Yaakov. Quite a few psukim about that. Vayishma Elokim et Nakatam, Vayiskor Elokim et Brito, et Abraham, et Yitzhak, bet Yaakov. Vizacharti et Briti Yaakov, Vafet Briti Yitzhak, Vafet Briti Abraham Eskor, Vaharetz Eskor, and so on. Vizacharti et Briti, all Otach Bimein Urayach. This is all throwing back to Am Yisrael's beginning, infant stage of Am Yisrael in days of the Avot. And the bracha part of Zichronot speaks of the Akedah. Zochreinu b'zikaron tov lefanecha, ufakdenu b'fkudat Yeshua v'rachamim mishmei kedem, uzchor lanu Hashem Elokeinu. We ask God to remember the brit, the covenant, chesed, and the shvua, the goodness, the kindness, and the oath. There was an oath at Har Moriah. God somehow bound, he caught himself, and with great mercy allows Yitzchak to survive this episode. Now we know when studying the parasha of the Akedah, Yitzhak remains the korban, the sacrifice, and the ram that's offered in place of Yitzhak is nothing but a type of a representative of Yitzhak. Vayaleo le'ola tachat beno, in place of Yitzhak, but Yitzhak remains the actual korban. The point of mentioning the Akedah here has something to do with the perennial Akedah. What is the perennial Akedah? So at the tail end, as an epilogue of the Akedah incident in the Torah, the episode in Torah, it says that Abraham returns to his servants. Vayashav Abraham el ne'arav. The classic question that's raised by our sages is, where's Yitzchak? V'heichan Yitzchak? I mean, he's part of the whole drama from beginning to the end. And now the drama comes to an end. Abraham goes back to his servants, who he left off before the story begins, and he's going to return to Beersheba. Where's Yitzchak at this point? So one has to explain why Yitzchak is conspicuously absent. Ibn Ezra quotes an anonymous commentary who he refuses to identify, and he refuses to even accept the legitimacy of what he has to say, but nevertheless finds it worthwhile to say it, which is rather interesting. And this anonymous commentator says the following, that the reason why it does not mention Yitzchak's return with Abraham, because he was actually slaughtered. He was actually slaughtered on the Mizbeach. But what are you talking about, slaughtered? He wasn't slaughtered. Keep reading in the Chumash, in Parshat Chayei Sarah, Yitzchak is there. Keep reading in Parshat Toldot, Yitzchak is there. Keep reading in Parshat Vayishlach. He's still there. He's still alive in Parshat Vayishlach. So what do you mean he's slaughtered? So this Parshan says he was slaughtered and was resurrected. He kam latriya. He revived. He became revived. Revived. Now, Ebenezer says this cannot be. He explains why this is out of line with the Pshat. Fine. But who could have imagined such a perush? Who could have imagined such a commentary on the Akedah story, that Yitzchak was actually slaughtered, if not for some rav getting up to his community in the aftermath of the Crusades of 1096. The aftermath of the Crusades of 1096, that which generated our avarachamim that we say on Shabbatot before Musaf, ki lo takodesh shemasru et nafsham al kedushat Hashem. We say on Tisha B'Av, We speak about the three major Torah centers that were decimated. The cities of Shum, Shin Vav Mem, Spire, Varmaiza, and Magensia. So that's Mainz, Worms, and Spire. So you have the three big cities that were extremely, not just well populated, but populated with great Torah scholars of the 11th century. And these centers were obliterated in the First Crusade of 1096. And in the keynote that we say on Tisha B'Av, we even have dates. And the dates were the 8th of Iyar, the 23rd of Iyar, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, the 3rd of Sivan, and the 6th of Sivan, which is Chag HaShavuot. They're all post-Pesach dates because the pogroms were initiated because of the blood libels. That as if to say we needed blood of a Christian child to bake the matzahs. As much as this may sound so illogical, you should know, and I once saw this in Encyclopedia Judaica, the last known blood libel was in former Soviet Union in 1963 under Khrushchev. There was still a blood libel. But if you remember the book, The Fixer, 1905 in Kiev, in Kishinev, was the famous pogrom of Kishinev, beginning of the 20th century, that was a blood libel, exactly this classic blood libel. Golda Meir spoke about the blood libel of Kishinev. She was a young girl there at the time. And I remember when she was prime minister in 1969 and visited the then Pope Paul VI, who was not exactly a good friend of Am Yisrael, putting it bluntly. And the Pope, 2 years after the Six-Day War, wants to give to Golda Meir some Musar, explains that we should have compassion on the Palestinians and so on. So Golda responded right to his face, says, yeah, of course we have to have compassion. But you know, I remember as a child, the Kishinev pogroms, you're not going to tell us about compassion. The church is going to lecture Am Yisrael about compassion after the Kishinev pogroms. So the pogroms of 1096 caused the situation where anybody who came to shul the next year, three-quarters of the shul was empty. It's not because they were in quarantine. They were dead. And somebody had to get up and give strength and encouragement to Am Yisrael to continue. And he gets up and he speaks about the Akedah. And he said the Yitzchak was also slaughtered. But there was a time that he revived. He was revived. And this continuation. In that context, I can understand it as a homiletic piece, not as the pshat, the understanding of the psukim when you're learning the chumash, but as a very, very powerful, powerful drive to the people to hang in there, because even Yitzchak was slaughtered and will be revived, and so on. And it's we on Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzmud, we read many times the parasha from Yecheskel, who speaks about the dry bones. Will these bones ever revive itself? Well, just pay one visit to Medinat Yisrael and you'll see that the bones have revived itself. Nachon, it's true. The people who were murdered will never come back. We understand that. But Am Yisrael was really down and out practically 1945. And look at the situation today. In certain areas, we're global leaders. And it's miraculous. It's absolutely, absolutely miraculous. So the Zichronot that we mention about the Akedah, we end off by saying, Ki zocher kol ha-nishkachot atahu me'olam. You remember all the things that were forgotten. Ve'ein shikha lefnei chiseicha v'decha. Nothing by you was ever forgotten. Nothing. Ve'akedat Yitzhak lizaro hayom berachamim tizkor. And today on Rosh Hashanah, you should remember the Akedah. The Rav said, that's not the understanding. V'akedat Yitzhak nizaro hayom. We want God to appreciate the current, contemporary Akedah. Every one of us have sacrificial moments. Now, we're not asked to do what Avraham Avinu was asked to do. Some of us, it's measured in money. We have to pay more for Jewish education. We have to pay more for kosher food. We have to pay more for a variety of things. It's taxing to be a Torah observant Jew. That's a sacrifice. And then there's the time and the effort. Jewish communities require people to give from the time. That's also a sacrificial moment for people. And there's so many areas of chesed that are sacrificial on our part. We would love to do other things, but we're not going to do that because of. And Am Yisrael is built upon sacrifices. The Rav said that there are two different ways to read the bracha of Ritzei. V'hashebet ha'avodah l'vivitecha v'ishei Yisrael. God should restore the service, the Beit HaMikdash, including the sacrificial activity, v'ishei Yisrael. Or to read it, v'ishei Yisrael u'tfilatam be'avat kabel b'ratzon. God should accept our prayers with the ishei Yisrael, the fire of Israel. So what are the fire of Israel if it's not sacrificial activity in Beit HaMikdash? He said it's the moments of sacrifice, that self-sacrifice, that we are involved in and day out as being part of Am Yisrael. It is really a sacrificial religion. And to that end, we ask God to take this into consideration when considering our judgment on Rosh Hashanah. V'akedat Yitzhak l'za'o hayom v'rachamim tizkor. Hayom, today. And to that we sing at the end, hayom ta'amtzeinu, hayom t'vorcheinu, hayom t'gadleinu. They're emphasizing the hayom, 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 the contemporary situation of what we're in today. So this is the thrust of the zichronot. And then there's the shofarot, which talks about basically Matan Torah and everything that's all about Har Sinai. And the Rav said that there are two covenants. He spoke about this in 1956 at the famous speech that he delivered at YU Yeshiva University on Yom HaTzmaut, called Dodi Dofek, where he speaks of two different sides of the covenant, the Brit. There's the covenant with our forefathers, the Brit Avot, and there's the covenant at Sinai, Brit Sinai, which is Matan Torah. So the Rav said that in Zichronot, it's everything pre-Sinai, pre-Sinai. And pre-Sinai means that we're all part of a same, we're in the same shizzle, we're in the same ship, and we're moving with the flow of Jewish history. Whether you like it or not, we are moving. The idea, and the Rav calls that goral, fate, whereas Har Sinai has to do with destiny, has to do with, in Hebrew we call it yeud, destiny. Destiny means we chart our future course. And here, where the two britot, the two covenants, play again, one next to the other, not against, but side by side, Am Yisrael requires both types of covenants. Because the first covenant of goral has something to do with the first malchiyot, that God can sometimes force us into scenarios and into situations that just force us to fall into line. The second malchiyot of by choice is already the choice of yeud, of destiny. And that's a completely different approach to being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you have the malchiyot, and then you have the shofarot, each one representing a different facet of the Brit Avot, the covenant with our forefathers, and the Brit Sinai, the covenant that was signed at Har Sinai. And with both of these Britot, we march on. We march on. The Rav said that when we accept converts for conversion into Judaism, so we have the convert do a Brit Milah, which connects him to the Brit with Avraham Avinu, and then the convert goes to the mikvah, and that somehow is reminiscent of Mamar Har Sinai. And at that point, he accepts upon himself or herself the yoke of mitzvot of Torah, and there's a restatement, if you may, of the Brit. And the Rav said, even though women, there's no parallel to the Brit Milah, nevertheless, both are there in the going to the mikvah, and it's part and parcel of the process of conversion. And one last idea that surfaces from the Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. So I said that there's a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and the Nuri and the Rabbi Akiva. But I have on the page here something interesting. I saw that the Rambam in source number 2 in his Mishnah commentary said V'halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. I saw that. Except that when I read the halachot in source number 3, where it says halacha vav, I am not clear as to exactly how the Rambam structures the 9 brachot. He says, "Bamed varim amurim, betfilat arvit shacharit u'mincha of Rosh Hashanah." We have the 7, like every other Shabbat and Yom Tov. Aval tfilat musafin shel Rosh Hashanah, nitpalel 9 brachot. We'd have the 9 brachot. Shalosh Rishonot, the first three. Shalosh Achronot, the last three, shall call Yom of each day. V'shalosh Emtzayot, and the middle three. Rishonah min Emtzayot, Inyanah Malchiyot. The first of the middle ones is called Malchiyot. Shnia Zichronot, the second one is called Zichronot. And the third is called Shofarot. And we end each one with its appropriate ending that reflects the topic. So the Rambam has three, three, and three, nine brachot, but something's missing. Where's the Kedushat Hayom? He doesn't talk about Kedushat Hayom. He talks about Kedushat Hashem. Kedushat Hashem is the Akta Kadosh, Antul HaMelech HaKadosh. He doesn't even mention it. He just says three beginning, three end, and then the three in the middle. But we don't know what the three in the middle are. He doesn't spell it out. The Rambam repeats this idea in source number four when he teaches us that the tzibur, not only are we obligated to hear the shofar on a private level as a private mitzvah, and indeed if a person is homebound for Rosh Hashanah, for whatever legitimate reason, all you have to do is hear the first 30 sounds and you've fulfilled your mitzvah, no doubt. But in the context of the community, the tzibur, the minyan, you have an add-on. And the add-on is to blow the shofar in the Shmon Esrei. So all communities blow in the Chazarat HaShatz. Some actually blow in the silent Shmon Esrei as well. The Rambam says, Hatzibur chayavim lishmoa tkiyot al seda brachot. The community has to hear the tkiyot shofar in according to the order of the brachot. Ketzad, how is this done? Omer shliach tzibur. The Chazan says, Avot ugvurot ukdushat Hashem. The first three brachot. And then he says, Malchiyot. And then you blow. Shalosh, three times. V'omer zichronot. And then he says zichronot. And you blow three times. V'omer shofarot. And then you blow three times. And then you say avodah, which is ritzeh, hodayah, which is moedim, and birkat kohanim, as we said, is sim shalom. Where is kedushat hayom? Both places, he's silent. He's silent. And the silence of the Rambam is absolutely deafening because it's not a mood issue. It's a dispute in the Mishnah. And the Rambam should take sides. Which way to go? And we saw in the Mishnah commentary that was written earlier, he was about between age 23 and 30 when he writes the Mishnah commentary, and he's in his mid-30s to mid-40s when he writes the Mishnah Torah. So he writes the Mishnah Torah, he forget about this dispute and what exactly happened to the bracha of Kedushat Hayom. So obviously we know that it's integrated, but the Rambam doesn't tell this to us. Where is it integrated? And it so happens in this section at the end of the Laws of Tefillah in the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, he gives us, as I said, this little abbreviated Siddur and Machzer. And there he tells us very, very definitively that the Kedushat Hayom is integrated into the Malchiyot exactly the way we do it. So why didn't he tell that to us in the Halachot? So I found a section in the Yerushalmi, Talmud Yerushalmi. It says as follows. The Yehuda, let's just preface. Eretz Yisrael map in the days of Chazal was divided into three regions. The northern region was called Galil. The center of the country was called Yehuda. There was no Negev at the time. There was no south. It was the center of the country. We call today the center of the country. From Yerushalayim to Yavne. And then there was across the Jordan River, Eve HaYarden. Those are three regions of Eretz Yisrael. And the Talmud Yerushalmi says that in the area of Yehuda, that means Yerushalayim, and in the Yavne area, the center of the country, Nahagu ke Rabbi Akiva. They practiced like Rabbi Akiva. They engineered the 10 items of the agenda and shtipped them into 9 brachot the way Rabbi Akiva suggested. That is the way we do today. But in the Galil, they did it like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. And then it says, Avar v'asav Yehuda ki Galil, u'bigalil ki Yehuda, Yatza, if somebody in the center of the country said the Musaf like they do in the north part of the country, or somebody in the northern country does it like they did it in the center of the country, he fulfilled his obligation. You don't have to daven over again, because both are legitimate. Which means here, the Yerushalmi is telling us, it's not even a machloket. It's not even a dispute. But it has to do with regional custom. And in that section in the Rambam, in the abbreviated Siddur and Machzer, he begins by saying, minhag pashut. Minhag pashut doesn't mean a simple custom. It means a minhag that hit pashet, that is widespread. The widespread custom is to do it like Rabbi Akiva. That is true, absolutely. So why did the Rambam not put his foot down in the halachot and tell us how to do it? Because if it's something that was based only upon custom, the Rambam does not slam the door on variant customs throughout the Mishnah Torah. It's an interesting phenomenon. He slams the door on every single halakha. But when it comes to minhag, custom, the Rambam gives a little bit breathing space for individual communities to find their expression in the area of minhag. And here the Rambam, I believe, very, very quietly leaves this question open, and he has a basis for it in the Talmud Yerushalmi, who tells us that this Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri opinions are not bona fide machloket. It's not a dispute in halakha, but they are variant customs on how to do this. And hence, and if you do it one way in the other area, the other way in the first area, you fulfilled your obligation because both are kehalakha. They're both okay and they're acceptable. And I think that's what happened over here. And just to answer that original question, so why didn't the Chachamim simply make 10 brachot? Why are we breaking our heads now with engineering a Shmoneh Esrei of 10 items of the agenda and shipping them into 9 brachot? So Rav quoted the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon said something sensational about Kaddish. Kaddish has 10 expressions of praise. Yitzgadel v'yitzgadesh is the first two, and then another 8. Yitparech, yishtabach, yitpa'er, yitromein, naseh, v'yitadar, v'yitaleh, v'yitalal. And shmei dekuchav richu means shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 8 plus 2, that's 10. I got that math right. 10 expressions of Shevach. Says the Vilna Gaon, human beings are not capable of using the number 10 vis-a-vis God. God will use the number 10. Aseret HaDibrot, the 10 commandments. When we quote from Tanakh, we quote 10 psukim from Torah, from Tehillim, from Nevi'im, another one from Torah, because that's God talking. And God talking, you can use the number 10. Human beings can only strive for perfection, but they'll never reach perfection. How does it say in Tehillim? Mi yaleh b'har Hashem u'mi yakum b'mkom kodesho? Who is capable of ascending the mountain of God? And even if you reached a certain plateau, there's always slippage, and it's very hard to maintain the type of altitude that you've managed once you've climbed. It's almost impossible. But we are obligated to strive and strive and strive. Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor. Nobody is asked to complete the job. V'lo ata ben chorin libatel mimena. Nobody is asked that you should just let go because you never think succeed. Do your best. That's what Yahadut is based on. Do your best. And whatever your best is, try maybe a notch higher. And that's it. And therefore, says the Vilna Gaon, the most human beings will be able to use expressions to God is 9. And therefore, in the Vilna Gaon's Kaddish, it does not say the 10th expression. It does not say B'yit Halal. Anybody who davens in the Maimonides School Minyan in Brookline, Massachusetts, where the Rav had his minyan, knows that Kaddish is V'yitadar v'yitaleh, shmei dekuchav b'richu. They don't say v'yitalal. I heard the Rav many times Kaddish when we daven mincha after shir, he did not say v'yitalal, according to the Minhag HaGrah. And the Rav said, this is the reason that in the days of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, they wanted to make it perfectly clear that even though these 3 brachot, malchiyot, zichronot, shofarot, are based upon the number 10, 10 citations from Tanakh, but human beings can never arrive at 10. We can strive for 10. And hence we will have 9 brachot in the Shmoneh Esrei, just like the Vilna Gaon talked about the 9 expressions of praise to God. And therefore, it required some type of intellectual gymnastics to forge together 2 of the brachot into 1, so that from the 10 items on the agenda, we indeed have only 9 brachot. And this is what launched the dispute between Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Rabbi Akiva, and then Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who had his thoughts in it as well, with Zichronot, and so on. As you have 3 different ways of trying to engineer the Shmoneh Esrei, but the common theme is that human beings cannot arrive at the number 10, maximum at the number of 9. And God willing, this year on Rosh Hashanah, each and every one of us will just do our little best. That's all. Nobody's asking anybody to do better than his or her capabilities and so on. But at least our aspirations should be in the right direction. We should have movement in the right direction. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take note of our desire to self-improve and to work on, inspire others through our self-improvement. Not to be judgmental about others, but have others simply emulate our way of life and show that it's a beautiful life of being Shomer Torah Mitzvot. And God willing, we will have a fulfillment of all of our tefillot and the ultimate blowing of the shofar. As we will say in Shofarot from Yeshayahu Navi. They'll come from the east, they'll come from the west. Erev Tov from Yerushalayim.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have a couple of questions, but before we do that, I never heard that last beautiful explanation of the Gra, but I heard many times the name of the Rav, I'm sure you did too, that the reason we have nine is because in Tfilat Chana there were nine, that all our Tfilat have to be patterned after biblical sources. So Mara says, like, who had seven, who had 18, and how they had 19 means Marla Davi, they had 18 references to God. So in Tfilat Chana, Chazal couldn't find, there was no biblical source for 10 brachot, so we needed nine. It's a totally different explanation, but fine. I'm just
contradiction.
No, of course not. Thank you. Okay, you want to take a quick look at the questions?
Okay.
Yeah, go back to the top. I guess we start with iPad. God with an unredeemed people may also be viewed as a poor kink. Ah, that's true. You can comment. I see that if the Jewish people are suffering, God is also in, so to speak, in despair. His
correct.
Kingdom is not correct. Yes, that's
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I will add that that Piacenza Rebbe, who was Rav Shapiro in the Warsaw Ghetto, the Eish Kodesh. So he said that, and I think I heard this thought from Shlomo Kalbach at a concert. He said that the Gam ki eilech begeitz al mavet lo ira ra ki ata imadi. We say, I won't fear even the valley of death because God is with me. If God is with me, I'll make it through. Somehow, he's holding my hand. The Rebbe said, read it with a different alteration in the grammar. Gam ki eilech begeitz al mavet, even if I'm in the valley of death, lo ira, I won't fear. But ra, I'm terrible, feel terrible, ki ata imadi, you also have to be in this mess with me. That is really terrible. And the idea of imo anochi b'tzara, that when Am Yisrael is in distress, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also in distress, and that's factors of a Melech Evyon as well. The Kabbalists speak very much so of redeeming HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's not just in Kabbalah, but in Hoshana Rabbah. We say in one of the Hoshanas, it says, we say it actually all 7 days of the Hoshanas. In the Kehoshata, it says, Nakuv vehotzeti, it says vehotzeti, Nakuv vehutzeti, that God took us out of Egypt, but he also had to take himself out of Egypt. Because there is an idea of Imo Nachi B'tzara, God is with us in these moments of distress and tragedy as well. Yeah.
Okay, you see another question about a midrash that Yitzchak's soul did depart. You were talking about his body departing,
right?
But that's a little bit harder to know what that means in practice. And if you want to comment, then Saul pointing out there are 15 expressions of praise in Yishtabach.
Okay.
Okay, so how does the Vilna Gaon deal with that?
I don't know, but I do know that Yishtabach carries with it different nuschaot. So I would go back to some of the sources of Yishtabach and see if we're not talking about grafted nuschaot. We have sometimes this issue where one source has this and one source has that, and the next thing you know, the third source has them all. So that could be.
Okay.
But anyway, in Yishtabach, which is in Shabbat, we see this after Nishmat Kol Chai, we say, Ilu finu malei shira kayam, ushanenu rina kamon galav, even if God would give us all the available talents and material to describe the greatness of God, ein anachnu maspikim lahodot, we'd never get through with it anyway. So therefore, it's not worth overburdening ourselves with too much. And in Yishtabach, the Rav pointed out, we say, he's the master of all expressions of praise. pick for yourself whatever you think of yourself. I have to go to work. And the type of a nice, fine, diplomatic ending of Divrei Shevach. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. We look forward next week, I believe, to Yom HaDin, right? The Yom HaDin of Rosh Hashanah and the Yom HaDin of Yom Kippur. Next on schedule, tomorrow morning, it'll be very different. I can guarantee you. Dr. Benny Gesundheit from Switzerland, now living in Israel, will be discussing Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot and Machzor. But I can almost guarantee, I think it'll be a very nice, you know, compliment, but I'm sure it'll be an extremely different type of shiur. For those who know Dr. Benny, that's tomorrow, then tomorrow night, the Haftorot, a regular shiur. So I'm putting in what I put last night. You can just go to our event calendar and see all our upcoming shiurim. I announce them all the time, but of course we have two tomorrow, three on Thursday, one on Friday, two on Sunday, three on Monday, keeping you busy. So we look forward to learning with you, and please invite a friend. That's my that's the price for admission. We ask that you encourage somebody, invite somebody to come to a class who hasn't attended one before. That's okay. So everybody have a wonderful day, and please go. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you, Rabbi Adler. Also, look forward to seeing you next week. Also, by the way, it's interesting. If I, you know, the way you presented Ubechein Tein Pachtecha versus the machiyot, the two types of machiyot. Of course, you know, the fearful machiyot and the nice machiyot, so to speak. Right. You present as one. Of course, it's also they're really in contradiction to each other. In other words, I also think the Rav explained really. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and Rav Akiva had two very different views of what machiyot means, and our machzor wanted to keep, as you're saying at the end, wanted to keep the minhag a little bit of Rav Yochanan Nuri, so it put in Ubechein Tein Pachtecha. As you said, I'm just not really just repeating a review, but they really were in conflict with each other. Now we're put together in the machzor to complement each other, perhaps. Okay.
Kol tov.
I just want to say something. Those who are in Yerushalayim, there is a beautiful sunset.
Okay, very nice.
I mean, now it's 7:07 p.m. in Yerushalayim.
Yeah, but we're going to have Ma'ariv soon. Take care.
Yeah, okay. We got 7 hours.
Thank you very much.
We have 8 hours until Mincha. Forget Ma'ariv. Okay. Okay. Have a good one. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bakasha.